Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Supervisors meeting for January 29th. I'd like to begin the meeting today with a flag salute, so we'll ask you all to rise. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And a few public reminders. There are hearing devices available on each side of the podium. Board chambers are T-coil compatible for hearing devices. Anyone who wishes to speak just needs to fill a speaker slip out, the yellow slips in the back of the room there on the little brown box. And then when you get to the podium, be sure and state your name for the record. And anything that you present today needs to be given to a copy to the clerk. So with that, we'll ask the clerk if there are any changes to the agenda.
Yes. Item number 21, resolution to apply for No Place Like Home funding. Staff is requesting that this item be withdrawn because the original property identified for purchase is no longer available. Behavioral Health and the potential contractor were unable to identify another eligible property and obtain site control by the grant application deadline on January 31st, 2019. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour notice requirement.
Perfect. Thank you. At this time, we're going to open the floor to public comment for items on our consent agenda only. And we have several speaker slips. We'll begin with Ann Robin, followed by Eric Greening, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Supervisors. Ann Robin, Behavioral Health Administrator for the Health Agency. It's my great pleasure to recognize Cindy Collins after 29 years of service to the county, first in the Auditor's Controller's Office and then for 21 years in the Health Agency, the last five as my right-hand man, wingman for administrative services to behavioral health. Cindy is here in the audience. We didn't know she'd be able to be here. Otherwise, we would have asked for a full resolution. But I just wanted to acknowledge her and her husband, Tom Collins, who is also retiring after 25 years in the county service. It's always hard to lose long-term dedicated employees, but both Tom and Cindy are happy to retire and are moving away to the Colorado, southern area of Colorado, to be with their kids and grandkids. And I just wanted to have the opportunity to recognize both of them. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Let's see. Eric, I saw you. There you are. Followed by Devin Drake, please.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening on item 25. This has to do with the groundwater sustainability plan for the Santa Maria Basin fringe areas. There's an attachment that supposedly relates to the DWR response, Department of Water Resources response to basin boundary modification requests. It's the draft decision on that, or a summary thereof, and it seems rather ambiguous and contradictory. Under Santa Maria Basin fringe areas, it says approve and then deny a portion, and it references a Ziegler Canyon area, and then it says insufficient scientific evidence to support modification. So was there evidence to support any modification? If so, what modifications? And most specifically, is or is not the Price Canyon area going to be included in this groundwater sustainability plan? Thank you.
Yep. Devin Drake, followed by Michelle Shoresman.
Good morning, Supervisors. Devin Drake, Social Services. On agenda item number 28, we had one correction on page 2 of the agenda item transmittal at the top. The date states 1/15/2019. It should be 1/29/2019. Sorry for that oversight.
Thank you. Michelle Shoresman, followed by Christy Mulcahyan. Dr. Christy Mulcahyan.
Good morning. My name is Michelle Shoresman. I'm the Division Manager for Healthcare Services at the County Health Agency. And I just want to speak on item number 29, which is a recognition for Dr. Dane Holwalt. I just want to express a few words of appreciation and recognition for Dr. Holwalt. Dr. Holwalt has served this county in a variety of capacities for over the past 24 years. In all his efforts, he has tirelessly put the needs of his patients first, even when faced with some of the most difficult cases or hard-to-serve clients. There are a number of obstacles to providing care in a custodial setting like a jail or prison, and Dr. Howalt most recently has been working in the county jail. However, Dr. Howalt always embraced those challenges with ease and flexibility. He is efficient, thoughtful, and most importantly, as the resolution states, he's an advocate for those struggling with addiction. He has been with the county's Opioid Safety Coalition from its beginning and has been an advocate for harm reduction strategies and medication-assisted treatment. Thank you, Dr. Howalt. You have left your mark, and the county residents are better off for your work here.
Thank you. Dr. McCarron, followed by Barbara Bullock, please.
Good morning. Christy Mulcairn, Chief Medical Officer over at the County Jail. I don't think I could say it better than Michelle Shoresman, but I did want to just add a couple of things about Dr. Howalt. So we estimate that he has seen 75,000 patients at the County Jail, and he's been with our county for over 24 years. And when asking other people who have worked with him about, you know, anecdotes and things to include in his resolution, my favorite was that Michelle reminded me that when we moved to an electronic medical record from a paper chart, it was pretty painful overall, but one of the best outcomes was that in addition to not having to search for paper charts, that we could actually read Dr. Howalt's writing. So that was really great. So in addition to this resolution, which we're going to present to him today, we also do have a plaque that we're going to be putting up in our new medical programs unit. I'll just read it to you. And thanks to Dr. Dane Howalt for your 20 years of service to the San Luis Obispo County Jail Law Enforcement Medical Care Clinic, a true pioneer of medication-assisted treatment of opioid use disorder in San Luis Obispo County. You have served with integrity and a sense of humor. Thank you.
Thank you. And Barbara Bullock, please, followed by Lindy Owen.
Some people are put into society to help others. Dr. Dane Howalt, working under him, helped so many clients, and I witnessed so many good things. And it wasn't always easy, but he stood by those patients out at the county jail that weren't always recognized and acknowledged. And I appreciate his help for helping our county for so many years. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And our appreciation to Dr. Howalt as well. Our last speaker slip, Lindy Owen. If anyone else wishes to speak on consent agenda items, grab a slip, and you're welcome to do that. Someone?
Good morning, Lindy Owen. Los Osos. I wanted to request a little bit more information. We have a landfill that has been closed for, almost 30 years now. And concerns about the water pollution coming from it. And I just wondered if perhaps Mr. Horton or somebody could explain what the procedure currently is, because last meeting you pulled funding to continue the contract to be cleaning up the waste. And on this one, on item 6, you talk about agreed upon procedures report for the Los Osos landfill financial means test certification. As just a layperson trying to understand what that means off of the agenda information that's provided, I basically am clueless. So I was hoping that maybe a little better explanation. I asked last time too. And then I wanted to go to item, I think it was 21 was pulled, but we're looking at approximately $5 million coming from some of the California funding for helping end homelessness. And so I urge you to continue looking at properties, and I keep wanting to suggest that the property behind Cuesta College is leased out to many other businesses and nonprofits, and I do not understand why that couldn't be an ideal location for possibly the beginning of a homeless village based in three parts What I understand, and when we go to number 27, you'll be receiving the interim update, or I guess maybe you won't today. But this is the 10-year plan to end homelessness, which this is the last year was the final year. This is the final year. It started in 2009. In other words, we've made huge strides in helping with the homeless situation and getting people housed. But we're basically down to the end of the group, which are the ones that have mental illness and drug abuse. And they're not being housed, and they're only costing our system and themselves much pain and financial drain, I believe. So I would love to see even that as a possibility for the beginning of housing structures out there. You've got Achievement House, you've got Cuesta College, which can retrain. And with some of the assets coming with that $5 million, I think that you could definitely make some progress. I work with a few of them in Los Osos, and basically it's just a swinging door. They're back in and out of jail and drug with drug problems that can't be solved. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'll turn to the board. That's our last request to speak, so I'm turning to the board for questions. We did have a couple of questions from our public. If there's anyone that could just speak to the modifications on the basin, if there's anyone here, Carol. I'm staring at Carolyn while I'm asking that question.
Good morning, Board. Carolyn Berg with County Public Works, at least for a few days. And so Eric was asking about the Santa Maria Basin boundary modifications. The state's draft recommendations posted online are pretty vague, but we followed up with them, and they've approved most of the county's request, at least the draft recommendation did. So that would be removal of the Pismo Creek area, or Price Canyon, creation of a sub-basin over the Rio Grande Creek area, and then removal of Napoma Mesa and the Southern Bluff areas. And what they denied was the final fringe area, the southernmost one, and the Ziegler Canyon area over the Coyama River. So the state will consider the final recommendations in hopefully by the end of February. So we'll know more then whether or not they followed through with that. And then in May, we'll see the prioritization to find out what areas are still subject to SGMA.
Okay, thank you so much. Gives a little more information on the process. So perfect. And then the other question, item number 6 on our agenda, was the little bit about the landfill in Los Osos. Is there any way one that could speak? Thank you.
Good morning. Ron Munns from Public Works. The item was pulled because the engineering estimate, or the bids we got to do the project, were much higher than the engineering estimate. So we're going back and scoping the project, having some more data or information given to us to see if we could get a more realistic engineering estimate so we can go back out to bid.
Great.
So that will be back to the board.
Thank you so much. So we've answered the public's questions. No questions up here. I will entertain a motion.
I'll move approval of consent as amended.
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Bashong?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. Okay. And we're just clicking along this morning. I'll open to the public right now, open to the public comments for items that are not on the agenda. So this will be public comment for items not on the agenda. And we have several requests to speak. We'll give everybody just a second to go on out and begin our public comment with Bob Kerwin, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. My name is Bob Kerwin, and I'm representing the San Luis Obispo County SCORE chapter. I believe you already know SCORE is a nonprofit with only one major goal, and that's to help businesses grow and prosper. We all believe in the near future there will be significant infrastructure work that needs to be done in our communities. At times, some of these needed infrastructure activities could impact adjacent businesses by making it more difficult for their customers and employees to access their businesses. Recognizing this, our SCORE chapter has created a booklet that identifies a number of actions that business owners can take and that will help their business retain existing customers and perhaps even get new customers. I'm here today to provide the supervisors with copies of these booklets. And perhaps even, having worked with almost all cities and city managers, I recognize that they do everything in their power to minimize the impact of infrastructure improvement activities on businesses, as does the county. We believe the score is an asset for the county and all its cities and businesses. My being here today is to make you aware of this new service that SCORE has and that we're prepared to provide these booklets to any businesses in the county that need our help. Besides giving the business owners this booklet, we continue to offer our major services, face-to-face mentoring and workshops. We will continue to provide our services to any existing businesses or any person that wants to go into business and needs our support. I'd also like to take the opportunity to remind you that all SCORE services are free to our clients. No client ever pays for a SCORE service. I'd also like to thank Supervisors Debbie Arnold and Lynn Compton for their donation to SCORE the last time I was here. In closing, I'm happy to announce that for the fifth consecutive year, our chapter has been given the highest award SCORE National can give one of its chapters, the Platinum Service Award. That puts us in the top 4% of the 300 national SCORE chapters. Thank you for this opportunity, and if any of you would like further information, I would be happy to discuss this, what SCORE can do to help the county and the businesses in the county. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Kerwin. Congratulations on your Platinum Service Award. It's great. Eric Greening, followed by Maggie Gray.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening. I understand someone else will be speaking to the life and legacy of Larry Bross, and so I will simply affirm that he is present here with us and go on to my other issue. On December 4th, you instructed staff to include revisions to our county's CEQA guidelines in the hearing package that will return to your board, the housing package that will return to your board within a month or two from now. Parts of that package, but not the CEQA guidelines, went before the Planning Commission last Thursday. These CEQA guidelines revision, which could affect all sorts of projects, not just housing, may not be visible to the public until days before the hearing to adopt, buried in a package, other parts of which are likely to get all the media attention. If members of the public want to know what's coming, we can try looking at the website of the Department of Planning and Building. On their homepage, one can click on Active Major Projects and then on County CEQA Guidelines Update. For an update, this is way out of date. The next steps table contains events that happened between February 2017 and May 2018, then the forecast, report to Board of Supervisors with findings and recommendations spring 2019, and then the words not started. I presume those two words are now false. The available material links to summaries of comments derived from public outreach and to the quote-unquote CEQA working group draft suggested modifications introduced ambiguously, as it is not clear whether these will or won't align with staff recommendations. Nothing on this page references the Housing Coalition, whose wish list was included in the December 4th packet, although items on that list were often just subject areas rather than fleshed out policies. Given this contradictory and often misleading information, the public has no idea what to expect. Is planning staff working on language of their own? No way to know. Not even the Planning Commission knows, and they make far more environmental determinations than you do and ought to be in the loop. My advice, then, detach the CEQA guidelines revisions from the housing package unless they will apply only to affordable housing projects. Refer the CEQA guidelines revisions to the Planning Commission. Revise the relevant pages in the Planning and Building website to provide correct information and some idea what is coming. Move forward swiftly with the rest of the housing package while taking the time to ensure our procedures for evaluating and mitigating the impacts of all kinds of projects remain effective in shaping quality projects and protecting the public interest. Thank you.
Thank you. Maggie Gray, followed by Taylor Eisman.
Hi. My name is Maggie Guy, and I work at Beachside Rentals in Cayucas. I'm here today to make it known that I do not agree with the nightly fee you're trying to add to vacation rentals. From my understanding, you're putting a lot of the blame of the housing crisis on vacation rentals. If this is so, I demand to see the studies and reports that have been done of our community to support this statement. In 2015, the county approved a 1% tourism assessment to increase tourism in the county, which is great, but they instigated creating any new demand for vacation rental lodging. I believe it is unfair to add another fee and or tax to our guests. Our guests did not cause this housing shortage and shouldn't be responsible for paying another fee and tax towards that. All right.
Thank you. Taylor Eisman, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. My name is Taylor Eisman. I work in the vacation rental industry as well. But my family also owns vacation rentals in Cayucas. I'm here to speak about the proposed vacation rental impact fee to guests of only vacation rentals. I do not support the added fee, and I'm here to speak on behalf of all of our guests. They already do contribute 12% taxes, just like all the other lodgings, and that contributes, to my belief, over $9 million in TOT taxes a year to our county. Vacation rentals are just one form of the lodging here. And that makes up approximately less than 5% of the overall residential homes here on the Central Coast. Please explain to me why vacation rental guests only are responsible for our housing crisis. Why are we targeting only vacation rentals and not the hotels or the B&Bs or anything else? Vacation rentals already have many ordinances in place and with high regulation. I know we're also working on implementing those and enforcing them. So I know the vacation rental number isn't going to be growing, and the regulations are only getting stricter. I don't think it's fair to be driving our guests out of our area. We are a tourism county, and it's one of the leading industries in our area. Please look into other ways to fund the housing crisis. Your current proposed impact fee to just vacation rental guests is unfair. And that's really all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, Ben DeFada, and Ben will be followed by Dr. Nell Langford.
Good morning, board and public. I am Ben DeFada from the poor village of Los Osos. My subject today is those salary employees in this city and county that are making too much money combined with the many benefits they receive. If you look back as to how many times I and a few others mentioned that the salary personnel that work all over the city and county combined with their lucrative pensions already are burdening the next generation of taxpayers with enormous debt, and that anyone can see it would cause this county to go bankrupt sooner than later. It appears that every time something needs fixing, streets and so forth, when the voters vote for it, management gives themselves raises first, and what's left over goes to the voters, to what the voters voted for, and the crumbles go to the blue-collar workers. Lord, you can't keep this up. You must set an example and propose that all salaries and benefits of salaried personnel be frozen. No more sweetheart deals with when hiring salaried personnel, like paying their moving expenses, hotel bills, or their rent, and so forth, till they get settled. My voice is going out on me. Thank you. I won't burden you with that.
Thank you. Dr. Nell Langford, followed by Jamie Jones.
Good morning. I am Nell Langford. I'm here to speak on the life and legacy of Larry Bross, but better yet,
Larry Bross. I really want to thank you for hearing this appeal.
Let him speak for himself. Thank you.
A resident of Oceano for the last 20 years, actually a newcomer. I've owned the property for 40 years on Strandway in Oceano. First of all, I'd like to point out there's no way that you can discuss 38% of all of the park's recreation area without discussing the entranceway. It gets the vehicles through, which happened to be the community that I live in. And so I'd like to sit down and discuss that, because the whole intent of a general plan is to protect the health and welfare of its citizenry. I wouldn't be here if I wasn't surfing through the TV, and I came across, I think it was Mr. Melskow. I know him. He's not here today, is that it?
That's correct. He's...
Yeah, well, I've known him. And I heard Oceano mentioned, and it said the 19th, I guess, of December would be the last day to appeal. You know, I headed up an organization called the South Coast Coalition for many years, and this was the main issue on the beach. And I didn't know that I would live long enough for the 25 years to come up, but 2008, it said appeal the... I didn't know about this. That was on the... And I think that was the 16th your meeting took place, so I happened to come downtown and had a doctor's appointment, and I thought, I'll go down and see who appealed it, because, you know, it's a big issue. We're talking about 40% of the entire park that the county is part and party of, has been for the last 25 years. So I came down there, and I noticed that nobody had appealed it, so I was forced to appeal. And I went down the next day to speak to the advisory council, to the supervisor, and the advisory council had a meeting that day, had not heard anything about it. This is a big issue. And so I don't believe you've given adequate notice. I mean, I get notice when somebody wants to put a curb cut in next door to me, but I didn't get notice of the 584 acres that was to be transferred. I want to point out that the sale doesn't have to take place. You know, we could remain a landlord, maybe with conditions, maybe with some control over this.
That's Larry Bross doing his civic duty. And to this day, even though this board is still in closed session over the sale of LaGrande Tract to the Off-Highway Vehicle Division of State Parks and Recreation, it was not sold, thanks to Larry Bross. We miss him.
Thank you, Ms. Linkford. Jamie Jones, followed by Mike Brown.
Good morning. That's a hard one to follow, and we hate to see that tragedy in our community. My name is Jamie Jones, Kirk Consulting. Today I'm representing my clients that are part of our ever-evolving cannabis industry. I would like to request that the board agendize a quarterly update as quick as possible. I was going to ask for it to be scheduled for your strategic planning session on February 19th, but I understand that has been canceled, so maybe we can fit it in on another agenda. We are continuing to have some discussions, problems with planning staff, specifically to implementation of the abeyance resolution. The abeyance resolution was the framework in which it outlined the ability for those cultivators that registered under the urgency ordinance to be able to continue to grow as they process what we're finding to be their very time-consuming and expensive land use permits. And the interpretations we're getting this year for this year's cropping limits, how many plants, how much square footage, where can we do it, is different than last year, and it's still changing. And so I think we need to get that issue specifically back in front of your board. We're being told that we're not limited to cultivation area. Now it's cultivation area or plant count, whichever is more limiting. So the abeyance resolution, the urgency ordinance, our current ordinance, the state regs, never is plant count mentioned. It's always about canopy square footage. So our growers are feeling uncertain. They're not knowing what they get to put in the ground this year, and we need to be able to make those decisions. They're telling me by March. So if we can get something scheduled in February, we would appreciate that, just so it's clear. If it's going to go plant count, you know, let's have that talked about in a public forum and not handled by some evolving interpretations by code enforcement staff. And then I think it would also be a good opportunity to find out what's going on with the additional FTEs you assigned to the cannabis. Do we have everything back inside? Are we still using the outside consultants? We are finding that we're still having to work through some of our projects with outside consultants, so we've gotten differing level of reviews, different requirements. And again, it's time-consuming, it's expensive, and we just want to get everybody, all of our applications, our farmers, our goal is to get them in your permit process and get them in compliance. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mike Brown, and then our last speaker will be Lindy Owen, unless someone else would like to speak.
Madam Chair, board members, Mike Brown representing CoLab. Recently in the media, and I think Supervisor Hill have commented on the issue and the urgency of the managing the Diablo closure and what happens next, and we think that's proper. We would hope that you would agendize a business item for a report, a comprehensive report on what actually the strategy is at this point, who's working on it, what's going on with the effort to mobilize the community to deal with this issue. At this point, we know it's going to close in 24-25, perhaps sooner if these bankruptcy problems and so forth impact things. So it is an urgent matter. And replacing the direct economic impact and then the multipliers is a huge issue and may not be possible at all. Obviously, it's a vast undertaking and would impact land use and everything else in order to deal with this. And it's just not clear. We hear snippets that maybe there's some state-funded study or something, but I think it really needs to be aired out. And then there's the issue that in the agreement with PG&E and the PUC, the issue of the $1.3 billion rate increase that's necessary to replace begin to replace the nuclear energy that's going away that the PUC set aside to a separate process because it didn't believe it could be possible to get that energy or that it might be inimical to pay for it. What's happening with that whole issue? And then the issues involving the actual tax situation, the SB 1090 payments and so forth, what's going to happen with that? Is that really secure or not, particularly if they don't have the cash at some point? What happens there and what are the plans to deal with all of this? Who is actually the executive in charge of all of this? Do they have time to work on it? What's going on? So we would hope, and then in the end, consider asking that it be kept open. It might be less costly. And what would be your position on that? Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our last speaker, Lindy Owen.
Lindy Owen again from Los Osos. I wanted to speak on my public comment. This issue of the vacation rentals, Los Osos is getting approximately 1 to 3 a month applications coming in, and currently I understand we have about 30 of them. What we have done on the advisory council has put forth a new set of regulations that would apply to our needs and the wishes of the community to not get overwhelmed with vacation rentals. We have 3 hotel settings. 2 of them are expanding to almost double the size, I believe. So as far as providing recreation for visitors, I think that we're trying to meet that or allowing ourselves to meet that. But we now have a little bit of a crisis in 2 respects. One, people that buy homes are told that they could turn them into vacation rentals. It's really easy in the county. Los Osos has no problem. They just pay their basic early fee, and they can turn their house into a vacation rental. What we're trying to do is make them isolated a little more so that we don't have huge masses. The two women that spoke talked about vacation rentals not causing a housing crisis. Well, when somebody can't live in that house and go to their job every day, that's part of a housing crisis. So, again, I just would like to have all realtors well informed when they come to the county and ask for building permits for new residences and vacation rentals, to please be clearly informed that we do not have enough water to supply a huge increase. Right now, permits are being issued. Again, we see a couple of those every month outside of the prohibition zone, people that have no requirements to participate in helping the basin get balanced. And then I also wanted to, and also to me it's a conflict of interest that the county is pushing for more housing, because that is how the county makes a lot of their funds. We that live in Los Osos can see the impact by increased water bills by trying to produce more water out of no place. Also, the contiguous permit issuance as you go out to Los Osos now on the right side of Los Osos Valley Road, you're going to see almost a half a mile of greenhouses that were never there, and they're all for marijuana grows. The applicant put in for four different projects, but it's all really one project. Those are eyesores that will never go away. So at night, they'll be lit. I think we really need to think about where we put these. There's a couple hills they could go right behind, and then would not affect our visual. So that's all for today. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, that concludes our public comment. Bring back to the board. Any comments? I don't see any of the other board members, but I would just like to bring up and maybe ask Mr. Horton about if we have any time to address. It sounds like it might be beneficial to address some of the interpretations that we have in our various cannabis resolutions, and if we would have time to do that in February or early March to agendize.
Wade Horton, CAO, in February. February would not be, we don't have time in February. We could bring it back in March if it's your board's discretion to do so.
Okay, I'm seeing nodding heads, but do I need a motion to get it agendized or just direction? Okay, I see Supervisor Hill, Supervisor Compton. Everybody says yes, so that as soon as we have a moment. And then the other request for more information, public request for more information in a public setting would be agendizing maybe an update on the process, what's going on with Diablo. I don't know if you feel like that's appropriate at this time, but maybe your thoughts on that.
At this time, I believe it's best to discuss Diablo moving forward in closed session.
Okay. As soon as you feel it's appropriate to bring it into open session, we'll be able to maybe look at agendizing that.
When appropriate.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so that concludes our public comment period, and we'll be moving on to item 31 on our agenda. So I just move right into this, don't I, Annette? Just move right into the process here?
Okay. If I can make comment, I need to recuse myself from this item.
Okay.
Okay.
We have Supervisor Compton on the record leaving the room.
Somebody just text me?
Yeah. So this is a hearing to consider protests to a proposed wastewater service charge increase in County Service Area Number 7A, Oak Shores, Far Reaches of the County, and consider adoption of the attached ordinance if no majority protest exists, and find that the project is exempt from Section 21,000 of the California Public Resources Code. And this is all in District 1. So we'll ask the clerk to introduce the item, which I pretty much just did. But and we'll have a staff presentation on this by the Public Works Department.
Good morning, Madam Mayor, members of the board. While Lynette brings up the presentation, My name is Ron Munns. I'm with the Utilities Division of your Public Works Department. And this, the item before you today is a public hearing to consider a proposed wastewater service charge increase for County Service Area 7A in the community of Oak Shores, also known as CSA 7A. To quickly summarize the process for this item, at the end of the hearing, the clerk will provide an account of the written protest received. Since we do have a majority protest, we will request at the end also for a motion from the board to that effect and that the proposed ordinance not be enacted. We want to clarify that comments are more than welcome, public comments, but they don't qualify as a formal protest. But if someone wants to turn in a protest, they can do so by turning it in to the clerk before the end of the public hearing. With that, Lynette O'Neill and I are going to provide a review of the reasons why we were requesting the proposed rate increase, some of the background on the conditions of the system, and the finances of the system. There we go. Currently, well, what we're facing and the reason why we're here, there are three major areas where CSA 7A is facing an inability to fund operations. The main one is the necessary operations, daily operations of the system, funding minor capital improvements, including equipment replacement like pumps, they're aging, sludge removal from the treatment process, adding some SCADA or remote sensing that would help our staff be more efficient in supplying service out there, and doing some basic sewer line cleaning. And one of the biggest issues we're having is building reserves. I will be showing a chart in just a moment and explain the reserves a little bit more. A little bit on the financial background. The last rate increase for Oak Shores was back in 1998, just a mere 21 years ago now. It is interesting, the county took over Oak Shores in the late 70s, and the rate increase between the late 70s and 1998 was another 20-year period, so we are definitely long overdue in how we raise rates for the customers out there. The current rate is $262 a year, which is quite low when compared to other communities. And our current reserve is around $79,000. And our target is 6 months of operating expenses, which is about $325,000. I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. This is an important chart. And please try to remember some of this information as we get into explaining the financial condition and some of the other issues we're having. This shows revenue versus expenses. The blue bars are the total, represent 4 years of actual operating expenses and estimated for this current fiscal year. The blue portion are bars are all the operating expenses, including operation and maintenance and minor capital. The green line is our current revenue. As you can see, in the last 3 years, it's dipped below what our operational expenses are. And the orange line, or the bottom line down there, are our reserves. And you can see as we are unable to match revenue to expenses, we've had to deplete reserves to keep the system in balance. So how did we get here? The simple answer is the age of the system. It's about 45 years old, and years of deferred maintenance due to tight budgets. In the past, budgets dictated the amount of maintenance on the system. About 3 years ago, we saw a dramatic increase in the maintenance equipment replacement cost directly attributable to the age of the system. And we do anticipate this to be ongoing until we have collected enough revenue to get caught up on that maintenance, do the equipment replacement needed, and replenish reserves. And as you can see, that bottom photo is one of our sewer pipes that's actually in the lake that has been exposed by the low lake levels, and the erosion has exposed the pipe to the elements. So what are the risks? Again, here's a couple of example pictures of a manhole is that top one. It's made out of brick, and it's actually submerged in the lake when the lake levels have come up. Again, the bottom one is another view of the interceptor pipe, which we call, with debris strewn about it. And this is all exposed on the low lake levels, but when the lake rises, this is all underwater. So we have 14 sewer laterals, 19 interceptor locations, and 6 manholes exposed from the shoreline to this type of erosion. And again, with the when the lake levels go down, we've had added corrosion, and it's progressing on a lot of these pipes. So what are the risks to the community and the county? We have public health risks if we have a sewer spill, if something breaks, which then we would experience waterborne fines. And anytime we have to do emergency repairs, that's quite a bit more costly than trying to do preventative maintenance and replacement. And because this is a water supply for San Luis Obispo County, it could a sewer spill could interrupt supplies of the Nos Camino project. We have tried to put together some estimations on what the future improvements might mean in terms of cost. The main one is the interceptor and sewer main upgrades needed. And we have original lift stations, so we're trying to replace the pumps in those stations and rehabilitate those. And we did a risk assessment back in 2015, and this was a high-level assessment where they just looked at the system, the age, and all the facilities, and it came up with a range of costs between $1.7 to $7.3 million. And the reason for that range is really we don't know what we're going to have to do with the interceptor. It's actually down in the lake, like I said. If we have to physically move it, it'll be quite costly. If we're able to do some other alternative, like maybe line it, it could be lesser cost. But that's why there's that big range in cost for you there. I wanted to provide a quick summary of what we did leading up to today. Back in October, we went out to Oak Shores and did a comprehensive presentation on just the system and its deficiencies. And we kept cost out of it at that point because we hadn't established cost of what we might need in terms of a rate increase. Back in August 2018, we returned and discussed two rate proposals with the community. One, option one was the one we forwarded to you today. Option two was slightly less, maybe $100 a year. But both objectives were to fully fund routine maintenance and operations, a limited amount of capital projects, and then again start to build reserves. In addition to these meetings, we did provide the PowerPoint presentation from the August meeting to the Homeowners Association. We provided fact sheets, we provided comprehensive financial information, all with the intent of this being distributed to the residents to hopefully inform them of why and what we are trying to do with the rates. This is a challenging demographic since a lot of those homes are vacation rentals. It was hard for us as staff to be able to reach, so we did rely on the Homeowners Association to provide this information to the residents. So this is what the rate increase looks like. It is substantial. But if it did check all the boxes of what we were trying to achieve and really move towards building that reserve, because with those major capital projects looming out there, Oak Shores won't be able to afford, of course, to pay as you go, that kind of money. We'll have to debt finance whatever we do out there in order to qualify for a low-interest loan through USDA, for instance. You need to demonstrate that you have the revenue stream to pay it back. That's where that 6 month of operating reserves come in. And even if we can go out and find grants, you have to have matching funds, and you have to demonstrate the ability to maintain any project that you build. So the key really was to get the fund up in place so when we did go into these major capital projects, we wouldn't have to ask for another dramatic rate increase to help fund what needs to be done out there. So So just a really quick recap of the Prop 218 process. It does require a majority protest of 50% plus one to overturn, which we have today. That means we needed to have at least 327 protests. Again, just a quick review. We had to put out notices a minimum of 45 days before the protest period. We did mail these back on December 13th, and we had introduced our rate or hearing. We set the public hearing, for today, obviously. And at the end of this, the clerk will announce the number of protests. Again, upon completion, we will hear the results. And since we do have a majority protest, we will ask you to make that motion to this effect and do a roll call vote.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments from the board? Okay, seeing none, we'll ask the clerk to report the number of written protests received.
I received 426 written protests.
Okay, and we'll open the floor to any written protests. And you can turn those into the clerk now if there are any.
I have Oak Shores at 2492 Captain's Walk, and also I have a home at 2429 Stern Deck. I'm a general contractor. I've been building homes, custom homes in San Luis County for the last past 40 years. I understand when the house is project's being developed that it's being inspected by the building department and stuff, and make sure everything's done by code. The thing where you were talking about the manhole cover and the pipeline.
Sir, I'm just going to stop you for just one second.
Yeah.
We're going to go into public comment, which okay. I think. And right now, though, if you'll just give me 1 minute to ask if there are any protests to be turned in, just physically to be turned in. And I don't see anybody coming up. So we will open the floor to public comment. And
okay.
We'll let you fill out the yellow slip.
I already did. She has that.
Oh, she already has that. Okay, great. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Okay.
I just needed to get you in the right lane here. Yeah, okay, carry on. Thank you.
I just was saying that back in the 1973, I know back then things were very relaxed with the county. In fact, you can even get a building permit over the counter in 1 day. That's how relaxed things were back then. But I'm also, I understand developers, when they develop a property, like I was saying before, when the sewer line was put in and all the utility lines are put in, the utility companies take over the lines, and they're responsible for all the pipelines and stuff like that. And I feel this. My personal feeling is that the county is responsible for the sewer line and sewer pipe because they took over everything, and also the sewer plant itself. And it was all built according to how many lots were provided for sale at the time, and it's maintained. The sewer plant does maintain all those lots. If the county back then had that pipeline, which I know today that pipeline would have never been approved by the county of putting in water, underwater, and stuff like that. And I personally feel that the responsibility of the pipelines and the sewer plant, whatever repairs have to be done, of the county of San Luis Obispo, because they take in full responsibility of maintaining and repairing of it all the time. And they have to take control of the whole thing. So that's my thing about that.
Okay, thank you for being here. James Rice and Larry Murray. Yeah, and you'll come after Mr. Rice. Thank you. You're on.
From Oak Shores, and I was only here. I heard at the August meeting that there was a sunset provision, that this rate increase had a time limit subject to getting approval of a long-term commitment from one of the governmental agencies. Nothing in the material alluded to a sunset, so it was an open end.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. And Larry Murray, and if anyone else has something to comment, about just the yellow slips are at the back in the box, and you're welcome to speak.
Yeah, hi, I'm Larry Murray. I've been a property owner up at Oak Shores for 40 years. I built my I built a geodesic dome up there, so pretty much everybody's probably seen it. It's on Anchor Way. There's some vague things here. They talk about achieve a reserve goal of $328,000 within 3 years, and then pay for current operations and maintenance of O&M and minor capital needs. That seems pretty vague to me. And potentially reduce future rate increases. That's a pie in the sky, as far as I'm concerned. I think we're pretty much all smart enough to know that potential rate increases will be coming. And then qualify for CSA 7 for major capital funding, United States Department of Agriculture. Yeah, could be. But, you know, and another thing that kind of tweaks me is they showed these pictures of all these sewer lines that are exposed. These are all for the houses that are down at the very bottom of the run. And they're exposed because on a rough day out there on the lake, when there's a bunch of boats, they're going to get exposed. And those things have been exposed for years. And when there's a bunch of people out there and those things are exposed, there's cars driving over them and everything else. And it was a bad design. So whoever put them in there in the first place wasn't thinking, you know. And it was a bad move. And personally, I just never could understand them building all the houses that they put down close to the lake anyways, because it's an effort to get all that sewage back up. And it's a pretty radical rate increase. I understand that expenses are there and they have to pay for, you know, maintenance and everything, and that's legitimate. But this just seems like such a radical increase. It seems like they shouldn't have come at us as hard as they did. They should potentially try to look at coming at us maybe a little bit more gently, so to speak. And I'm willing to allow them to charge me some money, but $985, that's pretty intense.
Thank you.
So that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Thank you. Our last speaker slip, Dale Gustin. Here's Dale. And yes, just come ahead and you can bring it up. And yeah.
Good morning. I consider it a privilege to be here and also a duty today, because I do own a lot out at Oak Shores. And the other reason I am appearing is to understand, I have owned the lot for 30-some years and never developed it. And so they had put sewers in since I bought the lot. And I agreed to pay for the installation of the sewer lines. But I'm not using it. And so it seems like a lot of this rate increase is for deterioration and maintenance to bring it back up and make it. Well, if I'm not using it, why am I contributing to that, and why do I have to pay that increase? I think that as to the undeveloped lots, they shouldn't have to pay that until they hook up.
Okay, thank you. We do have one more speaker, Mr. Martinelli. Yes.
Good morning. Very enlightening. The reason why I came, I wanted to understand what the project was, and I understand that retired, used to run our facilities in San Diego, maintenance. So your charts don't surprise me at all. System 1973, costs are going to go up, revenues are going to go down. What's upsetting is one gentleman mentioned, is extreme. Somebody hasn't done their job, in my opinion, for the simple reason you don't go 10 years without rate increase. So we could be here at 900 and not anybody complain if it was 100 over 10 years. So to me, I look at the numbers this morning and I say 1.7 to 7 million. That's a big number. So you don't know what you know. I get that. But at the end, at the same time, you know, I've also been on the board of, you know, condominiums, and you know, you have to have a long-term and short-term plan. I haven't seen a detailed plan that's telling me what am I going to get for 1.7 and what am I going to get for 7 million. That plan needs to be presented. And then what am I going to get for 1.7? Am I going to extend the life for 5 years, 10 years, and we're all going to be back here again? Or does the 7 million bring us up for another 30, 40 years? So whoever's managing our system certainly does not have a plan, or to me, a detailed plan that should show, you know, exactly how our money is going to be spent over the next 10 years. And I think that everybody and anybody that's of all the protesters, I think we all agree that a rate increase is due. You, either that or you're going to have a catastrophic failure, and none of us want that. But I think there needs to be an understanding of how you get there. What's the short-term plan? If that's the 1.7, then that's figure out what that rate increase is with a buffer to get the managing expenses up or the reserve up. But to jack it up as much as it is, it's just extreme. And it's what, padding the number? Again, I've run a facility, superintendent of a facility of an aging system. I know when you pad the reserve, all that money is a Band-Aid. That's a Band-Aid for labor, labor, overtime, unexpected delays. So let's come up with a detailed plan of what we're going to get for our money. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't have any more requests to speak, so we'll move on to offering one final opportunity for anyone to submit a written protest and close the time for submissions. I will do that if I don't see anyone coming forward, which I don't. So we'll ask the clerk if any additional protests have been received. I think we know the answer.
Correct. No additional protests received.
Okay, so if you'll please announce the total number of written protests received and whether that amount constitutes a majority protest, please.
I received 426 written protests, which does constitute a majority.
Okay, so we have a majority protest, and I'll bring it back to the board for any comments. Supervisor Pichon.
Obviously, the number has been reached for that. I will make the motion if that's okay with everybody, but I would ask Public Works to go back and work with the Homeowners Association to see if we can comprehensively put together, as the gentleman last spoke, about a plan for the future and be able to do it within the budget. I believe that the citizens of Oak Shores want to be able to deal with their sewer. So I would like to make a motion that finds that there's a majority protest based on the county's receipt of 426 written protests for the 653 parcel owners subject to the rate increase, and the proposed ordinance shall not be enacted.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Supervisor Hill, and I'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Under discussion, if I might.
Sure, Supervisor Gibson.
Appreciate, you know, sewer charges are tough. I would point out that the proposed charge that failed at $82 a month is a little less than half of what Los Osos residents pay for their sewer service, and we know that that was a controversial bit of business. It is the difficult reality of aging infrastructure that these costs are real. So I certainly appreciate your energies and efforts as the supervisor of the district to work with that, but I do think we need to be clear that the maintenance and safe operation of that system is the responsibility of the residents of CSA 7. And I'm concerned, based on what Public Works has put in the record, of you know, the potential for serious failures that would result in serious consequences. So I'd like, as is our charge here, to be sure we move in considered speed, if you will, so that the general taxpayer is not put on the hook.
And I would agree. I just think that we do now need to bring everybody together and build a coalition of support in this community. So I'm looking forward to helping on that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and we'll have a roll call vote.
Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Ms. Arnold?
Yes. Okay. Thank you for being here.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Okay, and that takes us to our last item of the day. Give everybody a chance to move around. I was just thinking, Supervisor Compton, I texted her too, but it might not hurt to text again. I hear the door. Just taking a moment to get Supervisor Compton back.
Half mile.
I thought I heard the door.
Supervisor Arnold, if we can take 5-minute recess and give Supervisor Compton some time to get down.
Sure. Take 5-minute recess and be back at 10, 11. Okay, we'll resume with item number 32, and I'll ask the clerk to introduce the item, please.
A hearing continued from October 2nd, 2018, and December 4th, 2018, to consider an appeal by E.W. Hurst Holdings, LLC, of the Planning Department Hearing Officer's denial of a request for a lot line adjustment between two parcels of 32.94 acres and 39.65 acres, resulting in two parcels of 10 acres and 62.59 acres, each located at 6220 El Palmar Drive, approximately 8 miles east of Templeton. In District 1.
Great, thank you. At this time, I'd like to ask the board members to disclose their ex parte communications since the last hearing on October 2nd. None, Supervisor Hayes?
Mine was in October. I think it was just once.
It's just once. I don't think I've met twice.
Well, this is since the October
2nd. Yeah, no, not since the meeting.
Okay, and I have had nothing since October 2nd.
I've spoken with Ms. Jones and Mr. Clark.
Okay. None. Okay, great. So we have a staff presentation by the Planning and Building Department. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the board. Holly Phipps, planning staff. On October 2nd, 2018, your board continued this item to December 4th, 2018, and directed staff to complete environmental determination to evaluate the impacts associated with the proposed project, modify the findings, and develop conditions necessary to approve the project. On December 4th, the agent, Ms. Jones, requested the continuance to January 29th because the applicant was unable to attend the December 4th hearing. Staff has brought before you today findings and conditions to support the appeal as requested. As you recall, the proposed project is a request by E.W. Hurst Holdings, LLC, for a lot line adjustment between two parcels of approximately 32 acres and 39 acres, resulting in two parcels of 10 acres and 62 acres. The project is located at 6220 El Palmar Drive, approximately 8 miles east of Templeton. It is recommended that your board adopt the resolution upholding the appeal, reversing the Planning Department Hearing Officer's determination, and approve the application of E.W. Hurst Holdings, LLC, for a lot line adjustment, SUB 2017-00054. And staff is available for questions.
Great. Do we have any questions from the board? Supervisor Pichon?
Ed, one. So this application is not a minor lot line adjustment, right? This is a non-minor lot line adjustment? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, any other questions? Nope. We'll open it up to the public. We have a request from Jamie Jones. She's available for questions. Would anyone care to have her come up? No questions there. Then we'll close the floor to public comment and bring it back to the board for a motion.
I would make a motion to adopt the resolution upholding the appeal and reversing the Planning Department hearing officer's determination.
I'll second it. And we'll ask the clerk for a roll call vote, please.
Under discussion, Madam Chair, if we might. As with the tentative motion, I'll be opposing this. I don't believe that the finding of better than or equal to can be met because we are creating a substandard size parcel within the ag zone, and we're well on the record with the analysis of the Ag Commissioner's Office as to the undesirability of proceeding with this, so I will be voting no.
All righty. Any other comments? Okay. Roll call, please.
Mr. Pashon?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Hill?
No.
And Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Okay. We will open the floor at this time to public comment on closed session. Okay, we'll hear from Mike Baum, please.
Madam Chair, board members, Mike Brown representing CoLab. As to the Diablo matter, I'm not sure why it's on closed session. You were originally a party to negotiation and making agreement relative to the joint proposal and everything attendant to that, and the $85 million. The PUC approved that proposal and the closure and officially closed that proceeding. So that proceeding's over. It may be that you're worried about some problem with the $85 million and that agreement and enforcing it, but we have no idea. We know you have outside counsel to help with that process, but that notwithstanding, the bigger issue we're speaking to is what are the administrative management plans and your policy related to those to manage this situation, which is going to happen in some form, where this plant is probably going to close, which other than the issue of whether you're going to get the $85 million or not, really has nothing, you know, it's a subcomponent. But what exactly is the, and I'm not just saying this to the Board of Supervisors, but the business community and the cities and the school districts and everybody else that's involved in this, you have this huge loss of economic activity, and what's going to be done, if anything, to replace that? Now, maybe the actual policy is not to try and replace it. Maybe the policy is to say, let's get rid of the growing economy, let's not have that, and let's have a nice place with, beautiful green whatever, and not have a growing economy, and then we won't have these problems with housing and all these other things that we're dealing with. So we don't know. But there doesn't seem to be any clear thing. And for the life of me, I don't understand why you can't discuss the 90% of it that doesn't have anything to do with whatever issues there are with enforcing your deal coming out of the joint proposal, unless there's other things that we don't know about. So thank you very much, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you. We'll ask council for a time estimate on closed session.
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. I would say it'll take 15 to 25 minutes today. And then since this is the last item, then we'll come out after closed session if there's a report, and then you'll be able to adjourn the meeting.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Okay, we're time to reconvene the meeting and ask council to report out of closed session.
Yes, Rita Neal, County Council. The board did meet in closed session and no reportable action was taken.
Okay, then the next meeting will be Tuesday, February 5th, 9 a.m. Meeting adjourned.